Incidentally, I'm the last survivor of that community. Mm. Just a few days ago, I received a death notice from the only other one. Time goes by. Well, I told you why I left my own institute. Of course, I was there during the war years.
If I could, just for the war years, there was a period there where you, because of your metalworking, which I'm assuming I saw your shop out here, which is very impressive, but and so I'm assuming you've had that interest for a long time. But you did some work for the Atomic Energy Commission during the war. Is that correct?
Yes, but most of it was for the Manhattan Project.
Okay.
Also, we did quite a bit for Army Ordnance and a little bit for Navy. The way things went, and I'll try to make it reasonably brief, next door neighbor was Max Gensler, a professor of mechanical metallurgy at Carnegie Tech. And after the war got underway, he got mixed up with Houdai Hershey and their gun tube extrusion plant out in Illinois. It used to be that gun tubes were made by piercing billet. Well, Houdai Hershey decided to make them by extrusion, at least up to 75 millimeter. And Max got involved in the mechanical properties of the resulting steel tubes. And as a result, had a great many tensile specimens shipped to him for testing and evaluation of the results. Well, in Pittsburgh, if you want somebody to machine a great huge roll, 25 tons or so, down to the proverbial gnat's eyebrow, that everybody in town wants to do it. But if you have a little bitty something, like a tensile specimen, nobody is interested. So Max had a lot of trouble. And he knew that I had a lathe in my basement and asked me if I could please make a few specimens for him, because he just desperately needed them. So I made about 24, and apparently they were all right. So then there was 24, and then there were more. Well, my wife was quite adept manually, so I taught her how to run the lathe, and she started making the specimens. And then they came in by the hundreds. And she told me one day that she spent too much time watching what was going on. If she had two lathes, she can keep them both going. So you find two lathes out there. And eventually you start making Sharpie eyes out specimens. And so I got a milling machine for that. And she was running two lathes and a milling machine. Mm. And reading detective stories on the side. Well, that's the reason for the shop.
Okay.
And when we got into the Manhattan, incidentally, we did so much of that that I had to set up a company because of some problems. And we started doing work then for Army Ordnance, Navy Ordnance, Atomic Energy Commission. And again, my whole workforce was Catherine. Mm. I did work in the evening, and particularly grinding tools. Well, Manhattan Project came along, and Max got involved in that. And one of the problems was what happens to the graphite in a pile. The reactors were known as piles then. So it was Max's job to find out. Well, we wanted to compare natural graphite with some varieties of manufactured graphite. Where to get the natural graphite? So I undertook to take specimens out of the back of display specimens from the Carnegie Institute. So I presume that still, if you look at the specimens of natural graphite in the Carnegie Institute in Pittsburgh, that you'll find them looking perfectly natural. But if you could turn them over, you'd find a hole in the back of each one. Well, that was the sort of thing that I did. And it got to the point where I had to design, or we needed to design, equipment that was different to anything available. So I got into equipment design and manufacturing prototypes. That's why I have so much equipment. When I went to Penn State, equipment came along with me for the most part. And for a while I operated this instrument making company. But I got too involved in both professorial activities and in consulting work, which I enjoyed much more than the business that was involved in the instrument making activity. Also, there was a limitation on what I could do with the instrument business without getting into a good deal of paperwork, which I detest. So, but I kept the machinery. Well, that's some of the background.
But when you were in Philadelphia, you were associated with a consulting company at Graham. Kenneth Graham and Associates?
Yes. This came about through having offices close together. When I first entered graduate work at Penn, I was assigned to an office that was right next door, or nearly so, to Ken Graham's office. And we visited back and forth and found much of mutual interest. And this is what got me back into electroplating. You may remember that I verified Fink's patent in high school and had never done any more electroplating after that, until Ken got me interested in electrodeposition. And together, we've devised some experiments on what was happening at cathode during electrodeposition. And I made the gadgetry and did the work, and we published some material together. And we got so interested that during the summer recess, he offered me a job at his little research laboratory out in Jenkintown. And that worked out very well. And we became personal friends as well as more or less scientific friends. And I met my wife at a Christmas dinner at Ken's home. So our connection got ever closer. And in due course, of course, we became brothers-in-law and law. So that's how I got into the Graham activity. After the that was completely interrupted during the war. But after the war, Ken and a chap named Crowley, Clyde Crowley, from Chicago, got together to form Graham Crowley and Associates with offices in Jenkintown, which is a suburb of Philadelphia, as you probably know, and other offices in Chicago, Crowley in Chicago, Graham in Jenkintown. And they got into a diversity of activities. And Sherlock Swan and I, along with two or three others, became the associates. Got into some very, very interesting consulting work. And one of the associates, as I said, was Swan. John Baylor of the University of Illinois was another.
Yes. when you were the...
Just a minute.
Sure.
Are you familiar with what...
No.
Well, turn your gadget off. What were we doing?
Well, what I'd like to do at this point is to start looking at your society activities going all the way back. My indication is you joined the society in 1934.
Right.
And you got your bachelor's degree at Illinois. Was that unusual to be joining a specialist society at that, after your first degree?
Yes, quite unusual.
Was that Swan's influence, I'm assuming?
Yes, Swan proselytized. Also, I should point out that I joined the American Chemical Society same time,
okay,
within a matter of weeks. And interestingly enough, Sherlock Swan, of course, got me into the electrochem, and Speed Marvel was the one who got me into American Chemical Society. Now, they both went on to become presidents of the respective society. I consider myself the president maker.
I was going to ask you earlier that why you didn't succumb to organic chemistry at Illinois with Marvel and Adams, and that really being their strength was organic chemistry.
Well, of course, my two theses were in electroorganic.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I was interested in the metallurgical aspects because really what I was studying was not the reaction as a chemical reaction, but as an electrochemical reaction. The reaction I studied was just an ordinary routine one, reduction of ketone to a hydrocarbon. But what I studied was the effect of the cathode, metallurgical aspects or properties of the cathode.
Okay.
So I didn't really escape the organic. Well, another reason that I got teed off on electroorganic chemistry in most respects was that I worked during the summer of 1934. That would be the graduation year for my master's degree. I went on for a master's degree, but I worked during the summer for Fraser Johnstone. And his laboratory, in which I worked, was directly below the laboratory in which organic synthesis was going on. And in that year, they did everything in the world they could to make stinks. And when an organicer sets out to make stinks, that's really something. Of course, the effluvia came down, just no air conditioning. It came down out of their window and into mine. I had enough of organic stinks. My reduction was with a material which didn't stink.
When you first joined the Electrochemical Society, did you go to any meetings? Was there a chapter at Illinois? Or?
No, the closest chapter was, or section was, Chicago. I was too poor to go up, and also I was too busy. So it wasn't until I got to Penn that I got interested in society activities per se.
Okay.
There was just no opportunity or reason to do anything in Illinois.
Did your membership in 1934 entitle you to? What did you, and you what did you get for?
You got the transactions,
okay,
twice a year. And this is a report, of course, of what went on at the semi-annual meeting. Also, you received monthly a bulletin, which varied considerably from time to time, but it was sort of a news magazine and contained some material of scientific interest alone, that is, apart from any society activities. Mainly patent listings pertaining to electrochemistry and to some degree industrial activities. It was pretty much whatever Colin Fink could find time to put in it, because he edited it, and he was a remarkable man. He did it all. So there were just those two things. The meetings, which I got into quite early. When I went to Penn, the first meeting to be held after I got there was in Washington, which was quite by. But I was still too poor to go. So Hiram Lookins loaned me enough money to attend the meeting. I was very, very favorably impressed, not only with scientific aspects of the meeting, but also the people. And I'll take one example that I'll never forget. You probably have heard of Charles Burgess, mm-hmm. Burgess Battrie. He was still alive and still fairly active in 1935. And I remember still going down to breakfast one morning and standing in line. The gentleman back of me asked if I were alone. He had seen my little badge and a member of the society, and I said yes. Well, it turned out to be Charles Burgess. He asked me to join him for breakfast. And it was a wonderful experience to have an hour or so with mm-hmm. him. And unhappily, he died not too long after that. But that was typical of the way youngsters were treated by the older members of the society, for the most part. There were some crusty ones, too. You always have to dilute things. So, Hiram Lupin's always a little careful with his money. And while I hope he was sure that he would be repaid, he helped things along by getting me jobs translating German patents for a firm of patent attorneys in Philadelphia. So I was not only able to pay him back, but also to begin courting the girl who became my wife.
Was there a section in Philadelphia
yes.
at the time?
Yes, there was. And I've forgotten which year I was elected secretary, but it was very soon after I moved to Philadelphia. And apparently I did a good job, because instead of putting me up the ladder to become chairman, they kept me on as secretary. Probably for two reasons. I haven't mentioned it before, but I looked much, much younger than I actually was. And I suspect that maybe this is one reason they didn't want me to become the chairman. But in any event, they kept electing me secretary until I left. And I got involved in quite a few things. And
how big a group was it?
I don't remember. I would judge maybe 50 members, of whom perhaps 25 or 30 attended meeting quite regularly. It couldn't have been much larger, because we met in the old Lenape Club and for dinner. And the dining room there was not large. Then we moved to the old Harrison Laboratory for mm-hmm. meeting itself. Sometimes the meetings were quite well attended by people other than members of the society, because we were able, I shouldn't say we, the section was able to attract well-known scientists through personal contacts and so on. It was Hiram Lukens and Milton Barbey of I'm trying to think of the instrument makers in Philadelphia. Well, in any event, we had Milton Barbey, George Perley of I just can't think of the name of the instrument company, but they had extensive connections with scientists all over the country and helped a great deal in bringing us people of outstanding ability and who were interesting.
Were most of the members of the section industrial people as opposed to the academics like Lukens?
I think that there was probably a majority of industrial people, but not a big one, because there were quite a few institutions in Philadelphia that had some interest in electrochemistry. There was Jerry Craik at Swarthmore.
Okay.
And I'm trying to remember who was at Temple. Oh, Sam Hyman at Temple. And also, there was a fair amount of interest in coming to electrochem meetings because we didn't limit ourselves to electrochemists for our speakers. The general idea was that we ought to be interested in science, and particularly science that had some connection, sometimes very vague, to electrochemistry. And one of the things that I'll say about the society, and perhaps elaborate on in terms of some of your topics, was the diversity of interests, diversity of activities in the society. One of the things that kept me there. Now, I was a member of the American Chemical Society's section in Philadelphia, but I found it much more rewarding to be active in the electrochem. Same thing. Well, not the same thing. To a considerable degree, the same kind of thing prevailed in Pittsburgh, where again I chose the Electrochem Society, and there was a section there over the American Chemical Society's branch or section, as it was called. Simply, I enjoyed the diversity of electrochem. Now, it's true that there's much diversity in the American Chemical Society, and becoming more and more so. But it isn't as diverse as things that go on in the Electrochemical Society. There are times when I wonder whether or not the society ought not to be called the Society of Potpourri.
What was the relationship between, if there was any, between the Electrochemical Society section and the American Chemical Society section in Philadelphia?
Outside of members that belonged to each, I don't
there
remember
was,
anything.
Okay.
Remember, of course, this was quite a few years ago. And
well, the reason I asked that question is that the ECS originated because of disagreements within the ACS.
And to some degree, yeah.
There was some ill feelings, I guess, between certain people, and that ACS didn't start an electrochemistry group, and therefore the ECS went its own way.
I've heard different versions of that.
That's why I was asking just whether any of those feelings still carried on, but...
Not to my knowledge.
Okay.
And I did get quite deeply involved in the Electrochemical Society activities in Philadelphia, even though I was still a youngster. I guess because sometimes I would do things other people didn't.
What kinds of things were you doing there? I guess as secretary, you sort of controlled things that went on, didn't you?
Yes, pretty much. Well, an specific example was the meeting which was held at Wernersville. The 1939 or 38 meeting was to be held by the carried out by the Philadelphia section, and we elected to have the venue in a resort up in the mountains, namely at Wernersville. Wernersville is 16 miles from nowhere, but a very, very nice resort hotel with good facilities. And we thought it was easy to get to because we were close by. It's just outside of Reading. Well, at that time, the chairman was Crenshaw of Ballard Kinwood. What's the school out there? Girls' school. Oh, well. Let's forget the name of it.
I should know. I can't think of it either.
It'll come to me when it's of no consequence. In any event, Al Crenshaw was chairman and supposed to be running things. Well, at the planning meeting, he didn't show up. And the treasurer and I were the two officials there. The treasurer was Al Ware, and Al Ware knew absolutely nothing about electrochemistry, but he published transactions. He was a printer, and he was a perennial treasurer of the section and a swell fellow. Well, he had never been to a meeting, had no idea what to do. So, of course, it was my job to run the planning meeting. And apparently I did a fairly good job. The meeting went off very well. If you want to more about it, there's a write-up about it, which I wrote in Interface.
Okay.